I'd like to begin speaking about... Does anyone remember the topic that I'm speaking about? The ultimate pilgrimage, not parikrama, but pilgrimage. The ultimate pilgrimage is really taken by the ultimate person, because he can go fully deep and can access the deepest realms of spiritual life, of Vrindavan. And I would like to just mention three little anecdotes about pilgrimages. There is a famous story from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, how one devotee, after practicing, one disciple of Ramanujacharya, after practicing spiritual life for many years, was somewhat frustrated because he felt he lacked depth of realization. So he asked Ramanujacharya, how can I quickly realize God? And Ramanujacharya said, walk south for 7 days. And then after 7 days, walk back here. So he walked immediately. This is the nature of very serious people when they get an understanding of how to act in spiritual life. They immediately apply that principle. So this sincere disciple immediately offered his obeisances and began walking south. Most of us would have, I would have said, why south? Why not southwest? Why not northeast? Why not 2 degrees this way? He just did it. So sincere and so full of faith. And he didn't take anything with him. And when it started to, his stomach started to feel hunger, he asked for some food, and he got some food, and then he kept walking, and it was dark, and someone said, please, you appear to be wandering, you come into our house, you can rest for this night. And then the next morning he woke up, and he bathed in the nearby river, and he walked, and he was fed somehow or another, and he slept somehow or another. And then he kept on walking after the next morning, and he found, after 6 days, he had a very deep, experienced realization that, in fact, Krishna was there. That, in fact, he was in Krishna's hands, and Krishna was maintaining him day by day as he walked south with nothing. It was Krishna who was maintaining him. And he understood, it's always Krishna who's maintaining me. And he walked back and he said, yes, now I understand. So that is actually deep, to understand that in fact we are in Krishna's hands. Although one could say that it is not the deepest, but yet it is deep. Another little anecdote, not exactly an anecdote, but in olden days, when householders were finished with their family life, they were old, and at a certain time of our life, we understand that it's not going to go on forever, this body and our existence in the body, especially if we hear classes in some philosophy. We actually start believing it. When one's 20, we can recite like a parrot, that I'm not my body, I'm an eternal soul, birth, death, old age, and disease, adiatmik, adibhautik, adidaivik. But it doesn't really, generally speaking, for most of us, it doesn't touch us deeply. But as we get older and we look in the mirror and wonder who the person is staring back at us, we understand that in fact, I am going to die. And as we see our friends our elders and our contemporaries dying, we understand, yes, me too. So when elderly people, towards the end of their life, in India especially, they would decide to go to a holy place. And because it was so difficult, because there were no airplanes and no cars and trains, they would put some of their possessions on their back, and then they would walk. And you can't take months and months and months of food with you. And you can't be prepared for everything that's going to not go the way that you want it to go, which is the way we try to arrange our house and our life, exactly everything in the place that's convenient for us. But when on pilgrimage, you can't do that. You can't do that. Especially when you're walking and carrying your possessions with you. You may want to play the piano every day, but after a few kilometers, you want to leave it behind because it's quite heavy. So before elderly people would leave home to go to Vrindavan, to go to Dwarka, to go to Rameshwaram, to go to Gangotri or Badrinath or Kedaranath or Yamunotri, they would say goodbye to their family because there was no guarantee they would ever see them again. And there would be a lot of crying. But they would go. So difficult. But they would go because they knew that I need to detach myself from so many of the attachments that I've built up in this life. Because the more things we are attached to, when we're dying, when we're leaving the body, the more things that we're trying to cling to and take with us, the more things on the material level that we are getting our illusory sense of security from, or those things that give us happiness on the material level, they ultimately, at the time of death, become the cause of great misery because we are separated from them. That was the second point. The householders in old age, in olden times, used to go on pilgrimage in a very simple way, carrying their possessions. And again, when you're carrying everything, you learn how to minimize your needs. One learns that quite automatically, because if I had to carry everything that I needed, including the long extension cord, ever-increasing electrical extension cord to my computer, that I can I couldn't go on very long. And the third little anecdote has to do with Vidura, as Prabhupada would would pronounce his name. When there was so much politics in the house of the Pandavas that Vidura was criticized so heavily by whom? Duryodhan, as Prabhupada would say. He said, "What is this?" Because Vidura had the very positive on one level, but dangerous habit of speaking the truth. So when Dhritarashtra asked him his opinion, what should he do? He said, "Don't listen to your son. Duryodhan, he's envy personified. He's even envious of Krishna." And Duryodhan was furious at this. "We're maintaining this person, Vidura, and he's criticizing me like this? You get rid of him. Get rid of him. Take everything from him and leave him only with his breath," which is easy to carry, by the way, in case you want to leave home with only your breath. And Vidura, he was very upset by this. But yet, in the difficulties of the moment, he saw two things were working, quite amazingly. He saw that, yes, Duryodhan was envious and kicking him out, and that was an action of Maya, due to the insensitivity and hardness of Duryodhan, that was actually Maya working. But yet he also saw that Krishna's hand was in this. So he took his bow, he was a warrior, he took his bow and left it at the door, opened the door, and walked out. And he went on pilgrimage for perhaps 30 years. 30 years! 30 years just walking, dealing with what life was giving him, not thinking, "I'm in control," And he left his bow, and the bow was the means of protection, and he adopted a far greater, and in one sense, and in the ultimate sense, more effective means of protection. He placed his hand, himself in Krishna's hands, and accepted whatever happens, because you have to do this on pilgrimage. I mean, not you have to do it on pilgrimage, but if one wants to get the result of pilgrimage, this is the essential point, that we place ourselves in Krishna's hands, and there is a point that comes along with that, which is we place ourselves in Krishna's hands and we accept whatever it is that happens as Krishna's mercy. That's the more difficult part, because sometimes we don't like what happens, which is to be expected because we're attached to so many things that ultimately aren't us. And I see this the older I get. All the things that I identified with me, they gradually start leaving me. And yet, you know, the obvious cute example is this, the hair. It's left. It's gone. And now the ability to run has left, the ability to remember has left, all these things, the smooth functioning and ability to concentrate. I used to be able to sit down and write for 10 hours at a time, 12 hours at a time, or something like that. It all goes. All the things. Yes, I'm like this. I'm the person who could do this. I'm the person who had curly hair. I'm the person who was a good basketball player. I'm a person who memorized this. I'm the person beloved of my parents. I'm the person. It all, each of these different upadis, these impositions, overlays upon who I actually am, one by one they're taken from me. So of course pilgrimage is going to react and not be exactly the way I want it to be, because that's Krishna's mercy to point out that so many of the things I think of as me are not actually me. And ultimately, the pilgrimage prepares us for our next destination, our next body. Because we want to drop all the external, at least for some time, the external feelings of who I am. I'm the person who can do this, who can do that, because they're all illusion. And who are we actually? Who are we actually when all the upadis, the overlays of who we are taken away from us? Who are we actually? Unless we ask this question, we're not considered humans, practically being. We're misusing our intelligence. So this is where life begins, to ask the questions, and everyone knows these things, that, you know, who am I beneath, who's the real me in the middle of this? Who am I? That question. And according to the methodology, tatvam yajganam adhyam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabyate vedanti tat. The wise persons, tatvavidas, they understand reality in different ways. There is one ultimate reality. Of course, the atheistical, Buddhistical persons, they will understand reality as nothingness, which is very difficult to accept, because here I am in nothingness, and I exist. You have to think that you don't really exist, which is, how are you going to think, which takes existence? How are you going to think that you don't exist even? It just doesn't work. And then you have to, what do you do with the rest of the world? You just try to walk through the walls because they don't exist? It just doesn't work. So of course, none of the devotees sitting here are like that. But then what is the absolute reality? So according to the processes that we use to approach it, the Advaita Tattva, that one absolute truth, the one all-inclusive reality, according to the process we use to approach reality, to understand it, to deal with it, then that absolute truth reveals itself differently to us. So if we approach through Jnanamarg or through knowledge and renunciation, we just see oneness in everything, because that's how the absolute truth reveals himself to us, reciprocating with our desire in our heart. And then, if we approach through, we'll go right to bhakti. If we approach through karma, we'll say that. If we have material desires in our heart, and we approach the absolute truth, thinking of myself as the center, which is how we usually approach the absolute, this is how we approach the absolute truth in the beginning, with myself as the center to get something from me, then the absolute truth reciprocates by giving us what we want, with me as the center. But these processes, with myself in the center, or the jnana process, doesn't cause the absolute truth to completely reveal himself to the practitioner who is approaching him. We'll speak a little more about this in a moment. So through bhakti, the simplest way to understand bhakti is, we say devotional service, and we say it so many times that we forget it has a meaning. It means activity done with devotion, with love, seva. Not just work. Without devotion, it's just work, which isn't very pleasing, in fact. So therefore, it's hard to continue unless we actually develop devotion to infuse our service with our work and offering. So if we have bhakti, or devotion, or love, devotional service, the manifestation of devotion and service, if we have some love, therefore, we become more trustworthy, in a sense. Trustworthy. And therefore, the absolute truth reveals his more intimate aspect of Bhagavan, of Krishna. And then, when the absolute truth, he reveals his personal aspect, let's say. That's Bhagavan. That he's a person, an actual person. Think of the implications of the fact that the absolute truth, Prabhupada in his purport in the first verse of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, he makes a distinction between the concept absolute truth and God. God means the controller, Ishwara. Ishwara, the controller. Of what? The material world. So what did he do before there was any... He's also the creator, so what did he do before he created the material world and there was nothing to control? So that's a very... Actually, we could speak about that for a while, but then we'll never get to Giriraj Govardhan. That's a very limiting or incomplete conception of what the absolute truth is. It's part of the absolute truth. He controls. But there is so much more to the absolute truth than that. So, he's a person. He's a person. If he didn't have personality, that would mean that he... I mean, the simple argument is that if he didn't have personality, he couldn't... If he didn't have any qualities, personality means part of personality's qualities, then he wouldn't have any mercy, for example. He wouldn't have compassion. And not only that, we would have things such as a particular nature and likes and dislikes that he doesn't have. So he's all-inclusive, so he has a nature and personality. So with bhakti, there is love And according to how much love we have for him, he reveals more of his nature and personality. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, oh, I'll put it in the form of a question, what is it that would cause, what would it be, and think about yourself, what is it that causes you to reveal to another the deepest secrets in your heart? What are the qualities of that other? Or do we announce, do we put it on the internet or the radio or the television, or do we stand up and say, you know, what problems we have deeply and what, and you know, how much, the most intimately kept secret of course that everyone has, how much money they have tucked away on. We don't tell anything intimate about what kind of jewels that we have somewhere. We don't talk about these things and just broadcast them. And very few people will ever tell the most deep secrets to our heart. What is the quality? Think, because Krishna is a person and we are persons. What are the qualities that in another person that would cause us to reveal our hearts to them fully, intimately? How many of you have friends in this world or people in this world that you could tell anything to, even the anything? See, if we need that, because, and if we don't have that, if someone doesn't have that, at least, not at least, but here, Giriraj is here, because we don't want to remain loveless, and he doesn't tell anyone your secrets, generally, unless that person is considered very trustworthy by him. So, if we don't have someone, and I've answered the question that I asked already, if we don't have someone that we can trust, it means we don't have anyone to love. And if our heart is empty, if we're empty of love, it's a very lonely life. It's a very lonely life. So bhakti means, so going back, staying straight on the topic, that bhakti, devotion to Krishna, when someone really loves Krishna, then Krishna will reveal everything to himself, about himself to that person. And it's not also that you meet somebody and the first time you talk to them, you think you really like them and they trust you, and then you tell them everything. It takes some time before trust deepens to the right level. Same with Krishna. We are trying to enter into the most deepest quarters, the most intimate, personal, private quarters, the innermost chambers of the heart of the Absolute Truth in Vrindavan. And therefore, it takes some time until our consciousness, ourselves, are completely loving and trustworthy. And then Krishna will reveal everything to us. What does it mean to be trustworthy? We won't get into a deep conversation on it, but you won't, we'll just say that there is no selfishness in the relationship, that you'll use whatever you know only for the benefit of the person. You're not going to write an expose and put it in the magazine like that, just so that you become famous. So this is the issue, or an important issue in Krishna consciousness, or we could say that it's the only issue in one sense, is that we become trustworthy in our love, so trustworthy that Krishna will let us know everything about himself personally. And that is Vrindavan. That is the cost of entering into Vrindavan. We could say it in another way, is we have to be 100% sincere. And when we hear, as in Maharaj's talk on the best of prayers, and what I'll be speaking about gradually in Mahaprabhu's Parikrama to Vrindavan, we're going to hear about those souls or those personalities, personages, who are completely sincere. They love Krishna completely and they're completely trustworthy. Completely love Krishna in differing moods, but all the residents of Vrindavan have this in common. They love Krishna and they would do anything for him, everything for him. Mother Yasoda would die 1,000 deaths to save Krishna from undergoing the slightest inconvenience of a drop of perspiration appearing on his body due to the heat of the sun. This is Vrindavan. The friends of Krishna, they will do anything. The gopis, they will do anything for Krishna. It's all about Krishna in Vrindavan. It's about Krishna, 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 and nothing else. If we want to know what limits us from being in Vrindavan, it's on one side the selfish desires that inhabit our hearts, the false, born of false ego, false sense of who we are, and on the other hand, so on one side, perhaps we have other desires, artificial desires really, that have invaded and taken over our heart, and on the other side, we lack love for Krishna, the positive. And therefore, we undergo the process of bhakti yoga to purify the heart and to increase our love. Now, to get into Vrindavan itself requires a very specific kind of love. It is not the kind of love that is usually thought of in relationship to God. In some religions, they think that the highest is fear of God. In other religions, they come to the Supreme Absolute Truth and just ask him to help with this problem and that problem and this problem, and what Prabhupada would call God is an order supplier. And that means like in Vrindavan town, there's shops that have, they don't stock everything in a shop. No shop can have everything, but you just put your order in and they'll go somewhere to Delhi or somewhere else and they'll buy it for you and put on their percentage and you pay for that as well. But that's an order supplier, that God's business is to supply our, fulfill our desires, as if fulfilling our long list of material desires will bring us the satisfaction that we long for. The particular nature of love that brings us the intimacy that brings us to Vrindavan has nothing to do with other conceptions of God. It's very intimate. It's very personal. It's so personal and intimate because it resembles the material world quite naturally, the dealings in the material world quite naturally. Because the material world, Udvasaka Anda, whoops, Anda, what's the, Udvasaka? Udvamulam Adasaka, yes, that this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And what's the difference? What's the difference between the reflection of a feast, of a sumptuous feast of samosas and halava and dal and this kind of and fancy pushpa rice and this and that? What's the difference between that, the reflection, and the real item? One, the reflection has no taste, and the real item has all the succulence and the taste, the 12 different rasas that bring happiness to the tongue and the mind. So similarly, the material world, because it's all based on falsity, it's a reflection. It's all based on me being in the center. In the spiritual world, the real item is based on Krishna being in the center. Vrindavan is based on Krishna. Again, everyone loves Krishna in Vrindavan. So this is what Mahaprabhu was teaching. How to develop Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavato Mati. Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavato. That means develop the sweet taste that comes from our relationship with Krishna. And Srila Jiva Goswami explains in Bhakti Sandarbha that the methodology, the Abhideya Tattva, which is what Mahaprabhu is giving, is Kevala Bhakti, Akinchana Bhakti. It's pure devotional service, and it is spontaneous devotional service. It is love, not because you have to, not because you have to love, but love because you love. It is self-generated activity, not externally generated, not the activity of devotion. Devotional service isn't generated from anything external, but it's generated from one's natural loving relationship with God. Not fear of God, not selfishness. I'm approaching Him to get something. I'm approaching Him because if I don't approach Him and pray to Him, He's going to push the enter button on the computer and the piano is going to fall on my head. And not to even go to the heavenly planets, or not to even worship Him with veneration, or you are the Supreme. The concept that Mahaprabhu gave, what He was giving, was something far, 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 far intimate, which means that love controls everything, but not sentimental love. Not springing from the mind, not material sentiment, but the sentiment springing from the soul in combination with the spiritual energy, Ladini Sambit Shaktis of Krishna. And the soul, instead of taking shelter, as we take shelter now, of the material energy with me in the center, the soul takes shelter of Krishna's service and prays to be accepted as a servant of Krishna, a loving servant. And built on the platform of loving service on the spiritual level, the finest of spiritual sentiments develop, the rasas develop. We'll speak a little more about this in a moment, and gradually we will get to the ultimate parikrama. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching this path of spontaneous devotion that will take one to Braja, where the soul just loves Krishna and wants to please Him. And one question that we'll ask now, but answer a little later, is how does Krishna react to that? To that kind of love? We'll answer that question later, and if I forget, please remind me. Mahaprabhu, in his incarnation, incarnation is not exactly the right word, it's the word we use, but avatar, who descends to this world, which isn't also the exact concept that's right, because when the Supreme Lord, He never ever comes to this world. He doesn't come to the material world. He doesn't descend into the material world at all. What He does do is when He appears, He allows the souls who are in this material world and who are qualified, He allows them to see Him while, although He is everywhere, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, although He is everywhere for someone whose eyes are covered with prema, for us, for less qualified souls, we can't see Krishna anywhere. Krishna is everywhere, and we can't see him anywhere because of our big, big false egos. And this is why we're in the material world, our self-centeredness, our lack of love for Krishna. So, when Mahaprabhu comes to teach this path of spontaneous devotional service, the way that the soul can enter into the most intimate chambers of the Absolute Truth, enter into Vrindavan, and apni atri bhakti saikainu sabare, he teaches, because bhakti bhava angakare, he adopts the mood of a devotee, and he teaches by his own example the process of spontaneous devotion by which we can enter into Vrindavan. So when he goes on parikrama, he's going to teach us the ultimate parikrama, someone who's acting as a devotee, but teaching us and getting the most deep realizations when in Vrindavan, but also teaching us not only what is possible, but also giving us guidance of how we should act, even though we should certainly not imitate the activities of the Supreme Lord, unless we are prepared to create universes, and not just one either, unlimited universes. We can't imitate, but yet in his activities is guidance for each and every one of us, how we can ourselves proceed to Vrindavan, if we desire to proceed to Vrindavan. And that is, this perhaps, borrowing Maharaj's phrase, my dear devotees, is the essential decision that we as souls have to make, as we as individuals have to make, and that no one can make for us. And we have to decide where we desire to be. And it may come in different stages, but ultimately that desire, hopefully, will be to be serving in Sri Vrindavan Dham eternally. So Mahaprabhu teaches us, he shows us. I would like to speak a little bit about Mahaprabhu's advent and why he comes, even though everyone is more or less familiar with these things. And then speak a little on the topic of rasa, because these things are important in understanding Mahaprabhu's pilgrimage in Vrindavan and his mood and what he experienced. So, Mahaprabhu has internal and external reasons for coming to this world, for his avatar. And the first, we call it an external reason, but it's not to minimize it in any way. It is to spread the methodology of the Sankirtan Jagya. Krishna Vanam Twisha Krishnam Sango Pastanana Parasadam Yagya Sankirtana Prayaya Janti Hisumedasa. The methodology, the Yuga Dharma, by which we can approach the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, through chanting Krishna's holy names. There are some wonderful songs by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur about how the holy names awards him with his spiritual body. The bud of the holy name blossoms and awards him with his spiritual body, his true identity, and takes him to the land of Vrindavan to engage him in service. So Mahaprabhu is teaching this by his example again, but also spreading it in a wonderful way. But that's the external reason, and his internal reason, one can say his private reasons for coming are of three. He wants to taste. He wants to experience. He wants to know. What does he want to taste, experience, know? What is it that Krishna, the Absolute Truth, doesn't already taste and experience and know? And the answer to this very esoteric question is given by Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Adi Lila, that he wants, the thing that he can't know is, what is it like to love him? what is it like to serve him? Because he is he. What is it like to see me, to serve me? What is it in me that makes the Brijbasis, especially Srimati Radharani, what is it in me that she sees? What qualities do I have that causes her to be so much in love with me that she tastes ecstasy and bliss even billions of times more than I taste ecstasy and bliss? And this is one of the great mysteries of Vrindavan that Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj explains. He said that those who think that the lover and the beloved enjoy equally, which is commonly of this world, they do not understand my braja. They do not understand Vrindavan. And this little hint that I'm giving now, I shall expand on, Krishna willing, in a few moments. And this is what makes braja so especially wonderful. And this will help us understand the leelas of Krishna, the different activities of Krishna, and understand that they are not mundane, they are not of the reflective nature of this material world. But I'll explain a little more about that later. So Krishna wants to experience the bliss from the point of view of the Ashraya in the Sanskrit, of the one who holds the love for Krishna. He wants to experience it not from the point of view of the object of love, the Vishaya, which he is. He is the object of everyone's love, but he wants to see what they are experiencing on this side, on the Ashraya side, the shelter of the love, the possessor of the love, not the object of the love. He wants to see what they see in him, what qualities in him they love. The bliss, he wants to experience the bliss that they experience. And to taste these things, and in the Bhagavatam, there's a wonderful comment by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Markandeya Rishi sees Krishna floating on a leaf at the end of the, and during the, in the waters of destruction, and Krishna is sucking his toe, like babies, little babies tend to do that. So this baby Krishna is sucking his toe, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna's hinting at the incarnation of Mahaprabhu, because even Krishna himself wants to taste the flavor of his lotus feet, which is service. Even Krishna longs to taste that. So that is Mahaprabhu. He's in the ecstasy, Radha Bhava Duti Suvalalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupam. He's Krishna, but with the mood and the lustre, Narpitam Chiram Charat Karuna Vatirnaus Kalo, that Krishna has come to give something that he hasn't given in a very, very long time. This very mysterious thing, the love of Vrindavan, especially the love of all the Brijbasis. He wants to taste that love, but especially the love of Srimati Radharani. He wants to taste that, and he comes for that. And while that love is so, the nature of love, it is effusive, it is overflowing, it cannot be contained, it cannot be controlled, it cannot be boxed in. So the nature of Krishna in that mood of love is Mahaprabhu, that the mercy, the love he's distributing, it goes everywhere. It's sprinkling on everyone. All over the world it's sprinkling. Because his heart is overflowing. When we don't have any happiness in our own heart, what are we naturally thinking? How can I get some more happiness? How can I get more possessions? How can I get more money? How can I get more some love? Because it's the emptiness of the heart that is causing those type of longings. But the exact opposite takes place when the heart is full of love. No longer nadanam nadanam nasundarim kavitam vajagat. Not even, I don't even care if I have to take birth again and again in this world. Because if I have love for Krishna in my heart in this mood, then anything that happens is wonderful. Everything is tolerable, but more than tolerable. Nothing causes me unhappiness. We are external, we get superficial, little things bother us because of the emptiness of the heart. Not that we can say, okay, now I know this, and we all already know this, that now from now on I'm going to love and be happy and have a full heart. It doesn't work. It's not an intellectual adjustment, because spiritual love is from the spiritual platform. It's not a mundane sentiment. And again, Krishna will give us and trust us with this when we're trustworthy. He wants to give it, but the container of our heart has to become holy in one sense and unholy in another sense. It has to become holy in the sense of pure and trustworthy and full of love, and unholy in the sense of no holes in it. Nothing can seep through. No selfishness there. So Mahaprabhu is going to show us all these things on his parikrama, and his whole life shows us all these things, the internal and external reasons for his advent as well. Now, just one other point that I had mentioned before on Krishna and the secret in understanding Braja Lila, and it is described. Could you put a little of this tea into this container, please? That all the people in Vrindavan, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj describes this, no matter what it externally appears like they're doing, they're herding the cows, the ladies are cooking, they're milking the cows, they're combing their hair, they're looking in the mirror, they're dressing themselves, no matter what it appears from the external of what they're doing, it appears to be just like the activities in the reflected world of the material world, but it is not that. Why? In Vrindavan, the center is Krishna. And the only motivating force, or that which propels every single action in Vrindavan, every single action of every single person, but not every single person only, but every blade of grass, every animal, from the deers to the dogs to the bees to the birds to the people to the young girls to the young boys to the elderly persons to the cows to the calves to the trees that give this kind of flower and the trees that bend down to give shade, there is only one thing on every entity's mind, and that is, oh, how can I please Krishna? Krishna is everything for them. Everything. Everything. And there's no room for anything else. This is the teachings of Mahaprabhu. This is spontaneous devotion. Service to Krishna. And this is what is required to bring us to Braja. No, and this is what I meant by no holes in the heart. The heart has to become holy to this degree. Not the slightest tinge of svartha, selfishness. Svartha. Not the slightest tinge. And love is what removes that. Just try to remove your selfishness by the power of your will. It can't be done. We have to use our will. It is necessary, but it is insufficient to bring us to Braja. So everyone in Vrindavan just simply loves Krishna and acts to please Krishna. Now, the other side of that is Krishna. How does he react? Remember that he is the Supreme Absolute Truth. He's also the controller. He's also the creator. So he created everyone like this. Right? So, no one can be happy in one sense, and no one can love him or enter into Vrindavan unless they love him in this way. Now, how does he react to that? What kind of God is this? Is he the one that, like this, if you don't love me, you're really going to suffer? If you don't do what I say only, you're really going to suffer. And then he's got 6 billion human beings. He wants 6 billion people to worship him. He has some kind of neurotic problem or something. And then he's happy. And if he's not, he's terribly angry. And minimum, he'll make you stub your toe or step on a thorn and then, or something. How does Krishna react to the people who are doing everything perfectly? Then what does he do? And the answer is, he's completely conquered by them. He's not a dictator at all. He's completely controlled by the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Indeed, he cannot leave Vrindavan. Vrindavanam pratyaja padamekam nagacchati. All the gopis clap their hands and Krishna smiles. He's forced to smile because of their love. The gopis want to dance with him, wanting to love him as young girls naturally want to love a beautiful, most handsome young lad, and he's forced to reciprocate with their love. He's forced by the power of their love. And if we want to understand Vrindavan Leela, the cows want to love him in a particular way. They want to give him milk, and he's forced to take milk from them. He's happily forced, as a lover is happily forced to follow the whim of the beloved. Mother Yasoda wants to give him milk in her motherly love. And Krishna wants to take it. And Krishna, and this is the point I'd like to make, his desire, and this is quite amazing because we were thinking, if God is that person who controls everything, and if he's only happy by everyone serving him, otherwise he's not happy, and he's not going to make anyone else happy either, unless they just do what he says. No, Krishna's mood is, when someone loves me, his mood is, whatever you want, I'll give you. You want wealth, I'll give you wealth. You worship me, you come to me. Akama sava kama va moksha kama daladi. Whatever you want, I'll give you. But if you love me, naturally, because he's a person, and as we know, persons require love. He's a person. He wants to be loved. He's complete, and yet our love increases his completeness. He's completely complete, but he's unlimitedly expanding always. When he receives love from his devotees, now we're especially talking about the Brajabasis, he reciprocates by increasing their ecstasy far millions of times more than his own ecstasy. This is Krishna. This is Rasraj. He organizes the pastimes of Vrindavan, the activities of Vrindavan, and this is the key to understanding what's going on in Vrindavan. even though it may appear to be one thing, this is what's going on the rasa level, from a somewhat analytical point of view, is that the devotees are trying to make Krishna happy, and Krishna's happiness is when he promotes the ecstasy of the devotees even higher than his. That is Krishna's desire. That is how Krishna reciprocates. His heart overflows. Is naturally one who has love in their heart. His heart naturally overflows. So Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who universes effortlessly come from him, universes, his body is composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. He has incalculable potency. Impossible to understand how potent and powerful Krishna is. He awards the Brijbasis more love and more ecstasy than he experiences, and then he becomes happy. And then when the Brijbasis see Krishna happy, because that's their only desire, their happiness increases, so they become more happy. And then when Krishna sees that their happiness is increased, then his happiness increases, and then their happiness increases, and then Krishna's, so there's anandam bhudiva, an ever-increasing ocean of ecstasy going on due to the reciprocation between that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and the Supreme Devotees, the Brijbasis. So when we see and hear about, as we shall, the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, that Mahaprabhu, he wants to taste these things. And when he goes to Vrindavan, he's going to visit the different places that Krishna performed his activities, and he's going to enter into those activities through his perfectly compatible love. He is going to enter in, and he's going to increase his ecstasy in that way. And that is what we are meant to do on Prakram. Mahaprabhu is going to teach us. This is what we are meant to do. To know the pastimes of Krishna and the residence of Vrindavan on the deepest level, deeper than the deepest, deepest level. Not to be able to just, like they have Amrita Chitra Katha comic books, and where the comic books and the Leela, the externals of the pastime, are delineated and the stories are told like this, like they're mythological tales. But there is no rasa. There is no exchange of love, which is the real secret, the mystery of what's going on in Vrindavan. The exchange of love between that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and the most intimate devotees, who he has allowed not only into the innermost chambers of his heart, but to completely control those innermost chambers. That is Krishna consciousness. That we are meant to taste. But it is not cheap. The cost is everything, everything. And we can't give everything immediately unless we've already been practicing generally for a long time. But we should take our steps forward and see if we can increase our desires. We should examine what's really to be gained in life. What do we want? We should be exceedingly honest with ourselves. What is it that holds me back? Is it worth it? I may not be able to do anything outside, but let our Krishna conscious desires become inflamed or burn a little more brightly. If we can do that, then our prakrama, our pilgrimage to Vrindavan is very successful. Because when our desire burns brightly, if we express our prayer to Krishna, to Giriraj, and it is sincere, even if it is 1% sincere, Krishna is so kind that he hears that. He takes that 1%.